are those of the host and the participants.
Okie doke, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're coming to you live today from Campbell Hall on the University of Illinois campus here on AM 580 WILL Radio. Today, a common topic for Media Matters, we're going to be discussing journalism, the state of journalism. And specifically, we're going to be talking about journalism unions. The Newspaper Guild, the union that represents print journalists in the United States, and the role it plays in our media culture, and what citizens ought to know about media unions, workers' rights for journalists, and how that affects the quality of our media and our journalism. And to have that discussion today, we are very privileged to have as our guest Linda Foley, the president of the Newspaper Guild, which is part of the Communications Workers of America, one of the largest unions in the United States. Linda Foley grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and went to Northwestern's Medill School of Journalism, working summers on community newspapers. After graduating, she worked the copy desk at the Lexington, Kentucky Herald Leader, a Knight Ridder newspaper, and then became a reporter, feature writer, and makeup editor. By 24, she was the president of Local 229 of the Newspaper Guild, and in 1984, she went to work full-time for the Guild in Washington, D.C. She was elected secretary-treasurer of the Guild in 1993 and Guild president 9 years ago, in 1995. It is my pleasure to welcome to Media Matters today, Linda Foley. Linda, are you there?
Yes, I am, Bob.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Linda. You've been on the show before, and it's always a pleasure to have you here.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people don't understand that journalists are workers, too.
Right.
And that there's really an important story to be told about the rights of journalists as workers, and it's also a very important part of understanding how our media system works and the sort of content we get. Perhaps you could tell the listeners a little bit about the history of the Newspaper Guild, the group you are the president of.
Well, the Guild has a very proud history. We were founded in 1933 by a man who was a very popular columnist. He was the top journalist of his day. His name was Haywood Bruin, not the some people may remember his son, Haywood Hale Bruin, who was a sportscaster, but this was Haywood Bruin, and he was, I guess, what you would consider to be sort of a crusading journalist. He spoke up for the common person. He took on issues of for civil rights and all kinds of rights of underrepresented people in his day through his column, and he was tremendously popular. He was the highest paid columnist in the United States, and in that context, he was the founder of the Newspaper Guild. And it began because Bruin and others were very concerned that the publishers, or as they called them then, the robber baron publishers, were trying to skirt their responsibility under the National Recovery Act, which was being proposed by the Roosevelt administration to help lift the country out of the recession, the depression at the time. They were trying to skirt their responsibilities under the NRA, particularly as they related to work week regulations and hours and overtime regulations that were trying that the Roosevelt administration was trying to put in place. And the publishers were claiming that the First Amendment prevented the government from imposing any kind of laws on them at all, whether they had to do with publishing or not. And Bruin led a crusade against the publishers on this point, and that kind of morphed into a movement among journalists, reporters at the time, and then that led to the formation of the Newspaper Guild. And then quickly the Guild expanded and took in other kinds of workers in the newspaper, what at the time was principally the newspaper industry, in the commercial departments, the advertising departments and the circulation departments and other departments in the newspapers, and then expanded to the wire services, a little bit into broadcast as we go forward. Now we're in areas like high tech. We represent now translators and interpreters in various places, and so the Guild has grown from sort of that vision into a union that represents all kinds of content providers.
Hello, Linda?
Yes.
Yeah, how many members does the Newspaper Guild have today?
We have about 34,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and Puerto Rico.
And what percentage of them roughly would be print journalists? I mean, working journalists.
Well, the vast majority of them still are print journalists. The vast majority of them, you know, I would say approximately 80% of our membership is still in print journalism. Depending upon how you define print journalism, which is much broader now than newspapers. We do have some members in publishing, and we have some members in magazines, as well as the news services like Reuters and Associated Press.
Has the percentage of newspapers that have unionized shops for their journalists, has that increased, decreased, or pretty much held steady over the past few decades?
Well, actually, as a percentage, it's decreased. And, you know, as media companies become more consolidated, that's actually reduce the percentage of media outlets, and particularly print outlets, that are unionized. But what has happened is that the numbers, I would say, as a percentage of the workforce, the number of journalists unionized has increased as a percentage of the workforce in the news industry.
We're talking to Linda Foley, the president of the Newspaper Guild, today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're going to be talking about a wide range of issues, as you'll soon discover. Linda Foley can speak on a wide range of issues related to journalism and labor. The number here is 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Linda, one of the issues that comes up with journalists, and I teach journalism and I've been a journalist, is the question of, you know, are journalists professionals? I mean, are they workers? I mean, should the, you know, I think the owners of all, at one time, and certainly some through to today, argue that unions are inappropriate for professionals. What are workers, journalists? Are they workers or professionals, or how do you answer that question?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that's an either-or question. Mm-hmm. I mean, the answer is they're both. Mm-hmm. They're workers, but they're also professionals. And, you know, I think that professionals are people who, you know, who do their job in a professional way, first of all. And second of all, you know, that journalism today does take, you know, some training, not necessarily a college degree, although the vast majority of journalists, I think, today do have a college degree, but that may not necessarily be required, but certainly there is some training and some, you know, some level of skill with communication that's required, and so I think by that definition, they are professionals. But I think, but in terms of the way that their jobs are structured and the way that they work, they certainly share issues with, you know, with other workers in this country, and it's interesting that you raise this issue because right now there is a proposal before the Department of Labor, which it looks like the Department of Labor, the Bush administration's Department of Labor, is going to enact, which would strip overtime protections away from reporters, claiming this very thing that, oh, well, they're professionals and the work week, you know, the standard 40-hour work week should not apply to them. Well, anyone who has worked in this business as a reporter knows that if, you know, there weren't a work week, a standard 40-hour work week, that people could literally be worked to death in journalism because the work never ends. You know, there are always stories to cover, and if there were not some restrictions on the amount of time someone, on the amount of time an employer can require someone to work, that could really, you know, that could really mean that people would be working essentially all the time.
So, and I assume this is a big fight that the Newspaper Guild is taking up right now to try to protect the 40-hour week for journalists.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and I don't know if your listeners have followed it, but there was an amendment proposed by Senator Harkin in the appropriations bills that were coming before Congress before the end of the last session that would have stopped the implementation of this of these rules and because of a sleight of hand on the part of the Bush administration and the Republican leadership in Congress, an omnibus bill that was crafted in conference stripped all those protections out. And so as a result now, the fight moves, you know, more to the floor of Congress and in the committees and so forth. But yes, we are fighting it very vigorously, along with other professional unions and others in the labor movement who will be affected by this. But reporters are directly mentioned in these regulations. They are specifically singled out as a group targeted to lose their overtime and workweek protections.
And what would be, I mean, this is a rhetorical question, but I mean, it's one that should be raised. What would be the implications, not just for workers and the journalists, if they lose their overtime rights or their right to not do overtime or to force payment for overtime, for the quality of journalism for people in a community reading a newspaper, for example?
Right. I mean, this is being framed as, you know, they would lose their overtime. And the truth is that far too few reporters, in my opinion, put in for the overtime that they work.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger problem is that that it would take away protections for a 40-hour work week.
Mm-hmm.
So that literally someone could be worked, you know, as long as their employer or their boss felt they should work. As a result, I mean, because of things that have recent trends in the industry and downsizing in the industry and consolidation and convergence and all of those C words that play out in the news industry, what's happened is reporters are stretched to the maximum already. Staffs are short. Reporters are called upon to produce content for news for various different media owned by the same companies. And as a result, they're stretched to the max, and we're seeing, you know, quite a bit of morale, bad morale in newsrooms, and even though the job market isn't very good, we're still seeing what I would call a brain drain of people leaving the industry, good talent leaving the industry just because the stresses of just trying to do the basic work is too hard. And as a result, certainly news coverage suffers, and so does the quality, or so can the quality of the journalism that's produced. And it just, this is an industry that relies, and journalism is a profession that relies on the goodwill and good morale of the people who are doing it. It's hard work. You're meeting deadlines all the time, and people who are in this job, you know, don't go in it for the money. They don't go in it for the benefits or the perks. They go in it because they enjoy doing it. If it gets so difficult to do the job that you don't enjoy doing it, then you're not going to get good journalism, and you're not going to get good people coming into journalism.
We're talking to Linda Foley, the president of the Newspaper Guild today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Phone lines are open at 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Linda, you've been president now of the Newspaper Guild for almost a decade, and I've spoken to you with you several times. We were friends. We know each other. We've talked a lot about these issues. What would you say the big concerns are of your membership in terms of the future of journalism and the state of journalism today? What are you hearing from working journalists when they talk to you and say, Linda, this is something that really concerns us?
Well, I think that the quality of journalism is, I would say, in terms of the future of journalism, is the number one concern that people have, that I speak to or that express their opinions to me. I think that all of the trends and forces that are at work are contributing to that. I think the consolidation of media, the reduction in numbers of media outlets or media outlets owned by a reduction, I should say, in the number of owners of media outlets is of great concern to people. I think, and the trend, and what I talked about before, which is, you know, just being so stretched that you cannot do the kind of job that people think they should be able to do, and they also see the cutbacks, you know, as publicly traded corporations, control more and more of the news business, if you will. There are more and more pressures to keep profit margins up so that stockholders are satisfied, and as a result of that, the pressures are to cut costs. Well, the newsroom, is the number one cost center in any newspaper or really any news operation, because that's, you know, it takes money to have a credible news operation. It takes labor. And it takes labor, right?
Yeah.
And so, to cut costs, you cut people. And as a result, that puts stress on people. So I think there are those concerns. I think there's also concerns about the pressures, the economic pressures, not just the economic pressures, but the pressures to slant the news to, these are not so overt as they are subtle. Pressures to slant the news, to maybe not cover the news from the point of view of average Americans. I think there's a lot of concern about that. And I think just overall, how are we going to continue to do our job given that the resources that are available to us are cut back further and further and further, and we're asked to do more and more and more.
Let's talk a little bit about consolidation for a second, because this has been an issue we've been speaking about on Media Matters extensively over the past year or two. Many of our guests from a whole range of backgrounds talk about this. It's a concern that's really struck a chord with the entire American population that's become aware of it in the past year. Why is concentration of media ownership a problem for journalism? How does that affect journalism?
Well, for one, I mean, on a most basic level, and really from a, you know, from a citizen's point of view, and even from a journalist's point of view, having antagonistic sources of news, that is not necessarily, having different sources for the news, like, keeping, anonymous sources. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about sources of news production. Having different sources of news, antagonistic sources of news, always makes for better news coverage. The whole romantic lore about the scoop in journalism is all around this issue of, you always do better when you're in competition with someone to, to cover the news, because, that's really the only incentive to make sure that things get covered, if you think you're going to get scooped by the competition. And so as media concentrates in fewer and fewer hands, it really does imperil the antagonistic sources of news phenomenon. And as a result, you have very few few entities, very few owners, really deciding what's important to cover in the news. So it's not just, should we cover the city council meeting or the school board meeting, but it's more where are we going to put our resources to make sure that, that the news is adequately covered. And as we just discussed, the newsroom is a cost center. And if you are a bean counter or someone who is a Wall Street analyst or a Wall Street advisor to a corporation, you're going to advise them to cut costs to keep profit margins up. And cutting the newsroom is one of the first places that they look. And so it is having a tremendous impact in that respect. And the other aspect of it is that it imbues a corporate culture in the newsroom that wasn't there before. Journalism, when I went into it, there was a sense, and this, I was a Woodward and Bernstein baby, right? So when I went into it, there was a sense that, we were to challenge the establishment. We were to be the watchdogs. The journalists were the watchdogs of society. We didn't always take the official word for it. In fact, we would question what officials said. That was part of our job, and not take anything at face value. And now I think that that's really dissipating on a lot of levels because there's a resource question in terms of the newsroom and being able to pursue stories. And two, I think that, there is sort of a culture of that kind of trickles down from the boardrooms, that we have a corporate culture, that we're looking at things from the corporate point of view, like much of our other institutions in our society that are sort of doing the same thing. But when it happens to when it starts to trickle down into the newsroom, you don't get that kind of challenge mentality to the to the establishment that should be there. And again, this isn't about individual reporters as much as it's about just a culture and an expectation and a sense of this is the kind of journalism that we want coming down from the top.
We're talking to Linda Foley, the president of the Newspaper Guild, today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. The phone line's here. If you'd like to have a question or comment for Linda Foley, 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines now. Chicago, you're on the air with Linda Foley.
Hi. First, I'd like to very quickly say how much I appreciate your program. I've never called before. I was curious, it's very closely related to what was just being discussed, but I am working, at least provisionally, more or less within the Chomskyan model of media homogeneity, and I was curious what specifically the Guild might be doing, not only toward the lesser theme of protecting people who are saying disapproved things, but also, and more so, on the what might be being practically attempted and or accomplished toward expanding the horizons for more heterogeneity in news content across the board.
All right. Well, thank you, caller, very much.
Yeah, I boy, that's hard to answer. I mean, I feel like we work on work on both sides of that issue every day. But let me just say, that in terms of protecting journalists or making sure that the rights of journalists are upheld, I don't want to be too dismissive of that, because I think that is the most important thing we do for journalism in the Guild. It's not that we don't acknowledge that people sometimes make mistakes. It's not that we don't acknowledge that sometimes there are bad reporters or bad journalists who maybe don't deserve to continue in their employment. But what we do is we do provide a way for journalists who are who are accused or who are questioned to be able to stand up for themselves, at least with their employers, if not if not in the rest of society, and we do a little bit of that too. So I think that's extraordinarily important, because
Linda, if I can interject for a second, sure. So I'm clear on this. So if a reporter is very critical of the president and says this isn't true or something, and the owner of the paper this is all hypothetical.
Right.
The owner of the paper says, well, that's outrageous. I really like this president. You have to be more deferential.
Right.
And your union will protect that journalist from losing his or her job.
That's right. It has to do with, there are procedures in our collective bargaining agreements that provide, safeguards. And basically, what our collective bargaining agreements say is that there can't be dismissals except for just and sufficient cause. And the onus is on the employer to prove that they have just cause for disciplining or firing somebody. And that gives people, a certain measure of being able to stand up. And Bob, it's even beyond that. It's I don't want you to do this story. I think I should do this story. Here's why. And we get into a heated debate about it. That gives me the moxie, to be able to stand up and fight for stories that I think should be done, on a daily basis. And so I think that's really important. Now, the second part of the caller's question, if I understood it, was, what are we doing kind of to sort of improve the overall context of journalism and the overall sort of malaise that seems to be overtaking journalism, this establishment kind of point of view that I talked about. And, that is, that's a much more difficult problem. And I guess I would just say that, in addition to doing what I would call the bread and butter things, which is, trying to make sure that salaries are kept up so we attract talent and the issue of job security, which we talked about just a couple of minutes ago, but in addition to that, we had over the past, a few years ago, we had a committee on the future of journalism where we were looking at some of these issues, that our rank and file members participated in. We've been heavily involved in the debate, and actually using the political clout that the AFL-CIO has and the Communications Workers of America has to try and influence the ownership debate. We think that's terribly important. We also fight for journalism competition or competition of news outlets wherever we can. We were involved a few years ago in a fight to save a newspaper in Hawaii, and we were able to do that in Honolulu. We have two competing newspapers in Honolulu because of the efforts of the Newspaper Guild and its members there to keep a paper open that Gannett wanted closed. We fight these battles every day. It's not something that we can, we can wave our arm and say, now we're going to do this and we're going to change this. This has occurred over time, and it means that it's a long fight over time, but we are very much involved on all levels in trying to make journalism better.
Let's talk a little bit, if we can, Linda, about the ownership fight that the Newspaper Guild, the CWA, organized labor, has been active in over the last year. We've talked a lot about it on this show, and in 2 weeks from today, we're going to do a full hour on the media ownership fight with Ben Scott, who's been working on Capitol Hill in Bernie Sanders' office, sort of chronicling what's been going on. I know you've been working with Ben.
Yes.
And, but let's talk a little bit about, you know, your involvement, because it's been a pretty significant involvement. And really, you know, labor's been a cornerstone of sort of the popular campaign that developed to oppose the relaxation of these media ownership rules. And one rule in particular that really affects your workers and journalism directly is what's called cross-ownership.
Right.
And this was, I think, the number one issue that the Wall Street crowd wanted to get scrapped. And this is their favorite one. Why don't you talk about what cross-ownership rule was or is and why it's important to journalists?
Well, the one that, you know, that we, that sort of drew us into this whole fight was the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership rule. Which has been in effect for decades, and what that rule basically says is, except for a few what they call grandfathered properties that had been in effect prior to the rule coming into rule becoming law, that if you own a newspaper, a major newspaper in a market, you cannot own a broadcast outlet. And what that has done is it's kept, for the most part, broadcast media and print media in the hands of two separate entities, and so, you know, what the FCC is proposing to do is wipe out that rule. There are other cross ownership rules about owning more than one broadcast outlet in a city, which you know, which is also problematic. But our concern in on this is heightened even more than it would have been, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And the reason is, with the technology, the evolution of technology to where it is today, you know, it isn't hard to convert or to take content from a technical standpoint and change it from one medium to another. So, you know, it isn't hard to turn a story, you know, from the print pages to the broadcast pages. And we see this already, you know, on web pages, how media content is changed for the web pages and as opposed to what's in the paper. So so our concern is that, you know, it will lead to these mega newsrooms. It will heighten the consolidation of news operations. And so we, you know, we, even though this seemed like it was a done deal in the beginning, we thought it was very important for us to speak out and to do what we could to fight against a change in that FCC regulation.
And to be blunt about this, Linda, if I can interject
here.
I mean, what it means in real terms is instead of having 2, 3, 4 newsrooms covering a community,
right,
a Decatur, Illinois, or Rockford, Illinois,
you'll have one.
You'll have one newsroom servicing 4, 5, 6 different media, radio, TV, print.
Right.
But you won't. You'll only have one newsroom and much far fewer reporters and much less competition.
Right. And the point of view will be the same.
And the point of view will be the same. So at that level, from the quality of life, and this is the journalism will almost certainly suffer. And this is why Americans across the political spectrum really were concerned about this issue in their communities.
Yes, and by the way, that's, you know, there's a lot of concern about that on Capitol Hill, because you can imagine that if you are an elected representative, that the prospect of having, you know, one newsroom decide what the news coverage is for your whole area or, you know, the largest city in your district is pretty, that's pretty daunting.
That's a lot of power in one hand.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, people in general are suspect of power, or they're suspect of
concentrated
of abuse
power.
Of power,
sure.
So I think that that's why you're seeing the public, you know, sort of rally around this. And the local markets will be affected most by that change. In other words, if that change goes through, there's some other rules that have to do with networks combining and, you know, that sort of thing. But in terms of local markets, you know, that's going to have a tremendous effect on the kind of local news that we as citizens get. I mean, it's probably hard to predict. It's probably hard to overstate, I should say, the effect that that's going to have on local news coverage.
Now, Michael Powell, the head of the Federal Communications Commission, who's a strong advocate of getting rid of these media ownership rules or relaxing them as much as possible, media owners, publishers, CEOs, and many pundits all say that these concerns that you're expressing, Linda, are overblown because with the rise of the Internet, there's really no reason to be concerned because there are now hundreds and thousands of websites that people can have access to covering, providing news and journalism. You know, we're vastly more sources of information than we ever had.
Yeah, you know what, Bob?
What?
I don't mean to interrupt you. But
no,
you
go
know,
right
like,
ahead.
Study after study shows this, and there was just one recently by, I think it was Consumer Federation of America and Consumers Union. Study after study shows that the vast majority of their people, despite all of these so-called outlets that are available to us, get their news from one of two sources, either the local newspaper or the local over-air broadcasting station. And if you allow those two to combine, you are combining the decision making and the point of view, and you know, combining into one newsroom, the two major outlets where people get the vast majority of their news from. So it's kind of without talking about use of those outlets like the Internet or local news, it's kind of it's really not a very valid argument.
We're talking to Linda Foley today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. The phone number here, if you'd like to call Linda and ask her a question, 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines. Charleston, Illinois, you're on the air with Linda Foley.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first one is, would your guest agree with the term, like so many other things in the world, newspapers and media, information media, per se, is being imperialized? Would you say that?
I'm not sure that I would use that word, but in the sense that it's being consolidated and it's being controlled by mega corporations, I would say that's true.
Okay, second question would be, the role of advertising and the print media, mainly newspapers and magazines. And I'll give an example. In Urbana, some time ago, and a little paper here in Charleston, in Urbana it was known as the Octopus. In Charleston it was known as the Platypus. And both these papers were shut down because the advertising disagreed with the content. Do you find that to be a negative for the news media?
Well, let me say this about advertising and, control of by advertisers over news content. First of all, that's not a new phenomenon, okay? I mean, ever since journalism, commercial journalism came into being as it's known today, there has been this, this tendency of advertisers to try and control content, news content in particular. And so, it's not as overt as that. That they're actually saying, these papers should be closed. I mean, I suppose there are boycotts and there are examples of that, or advertiser boycotts and examples of that, but. But I think the bigger problem is that you have these corporations that are influenced by all kinds of financial interests, advertising included, that that are having the effect that you describe, and that's what makes it so much more insidious and so much more dangerous today.
We're talking to Linda Foley, president of the Newspaper Guild today, Media Matters. The phone lines are open at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Linda, you're a labor leader. I mean, in fact, the Communications Workers of America, which is the parent union for the Newspaper Guild, is one of the four or five largest in the country, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think we're six, actually.
Six. Okay, you're in the top six then. But, I mean, it's a very powerful and influential union and very significant in the labor movement in this country. And you're a labor person. It's obvious listening to you talk today. These are the issues that move you. At the same time, journalism in our society is expected to be nonpartisan, not to take sides in labor management. Yet you've already talked about how the Bush administration is pursuing policies in the Department of Labor that will make it much more difficult for journalists to do their job well, in your estimation. Is this a? I mean, this strikes me on the surface as a tension for you as a you know, as for your for journalists in general to maintain being nonpartisan yet having partisan views.
Well, it certainly is a tension, and it's a tension that I balance, you know, every day in my job. First of all, I think that, you know, there's a difference. I think that the journalists draw, or at least my experience with the journalists in the Guild, let me put it that way, draw a distinction between issues and candidates. So when it comes to issues, there certainly is a green zone, if you will, or an acceptable group of issues for which my members expect the Guild and me and other Guild leaders to stand up on and to, you know, to do whatever's necessary, albeit in the political spectrum or whatever, to make sure that that those issues are upheld. And, you know, we touched on some of them today.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have to do with bread and butter. Nobody would say that if it was an issue involving standing up for the First Amendment or secrets under the Patriot Act, that the Guild should not be in the forefront of that issue, even if it means, you know, picketing the White House with a sign that says Newspaper Guild opposes this. So there's, you know, we never get any, there's not any tension over that. Labor issues is another sort of area where the vast majority of our members have said, yeah, you know, you need to stand up for us on that. That's what you're there for. So the issue, an issue like the overtime issue, is an issue that that we have historically not had any difficulty with. Now, where we get into where the tension really comes is when it has to do with candidates and work on behalf of political candidates and political parties. And it is very difficult. The Communications Workers of America, a week and a half ago or so, or 2 weeks ago, I guess it is now, the executive board voted to endorse John Kerry for president. You know, I am a member of the CWA executive board, but I abstain from that vote, as I have in the past when the CWA takes a position on political candidates. But I got to tell you, Bob, it's getting more and more difficult to be nonpartisan on issues like because of issues like the overtime issue, when the political lines and the partisan lines in politics are drawn so deeply in the sand.
You know, Linda,
one
thing that occurred to me as you spoke earlier about, well, listeners might well be familiar with this overtime issue that's in this omnibus appropriations bill. I think one of the things that's safe to say is even devout consumers of our news media probably don't know about it because labor issues have gotten such little coverage compared to the balance of news
right. In
recent years. And we've done several shows on Media Matters on this topic and quite recently. And the empirical evidence is quite astonishing with the decline in the amount of news coverage of bread and butter issues, of labor issues, of issues that affect working class people as opposed to business issues and journalism. And so it's sort of an irony that here you are, a labor leader of a union that deals with journalists, yet journalism itself doesn't cover labor issues very much anymore.
Well, I think, you know, some of that is, or a lot of that, I think, actually, the majority of the reason for that is attributable to what I talked about before, and that's this corporate culture that's sort of imbued now in journalism that wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's that. And then there's also, I don't want to use the word conspiracy, but there is, you know, there sort of is sort of a an unspoken kind of rule, if you will, among, you know, the establishment, the powers that be, that you know, that we're just not going to talk about these labor issues and they'll go away. And I think the media, and by the media I mean, you know, the people that control the media have kind of bought into that, and so they it's sort of not on their radar, and it is very disturbing.
Does John Sweeney over at the AFL-CIO or Andy Stern or any of the other leaders of the labor movement in the United States, do they ever call you up and say, hey, what's going on here? How come we aren't getting any coverage in the news media on our issues?
Well, I mean, they don't call me up and ask me, you know, that's kind of like calling up the choir director and asking them about, you know, what the choir is singing.
Yeah, but their call to you will go through.
But I certainly think that that there's an awareness that's the case. And as a matter of fact, the AFL-CIO in this media ownership struggle that we're having, this media ownership fight, weighed in very early on this issue and passed a very strong, their executive council passed a very strong resolution. And the resolution was not just about jobs, because we always care about jobs and, you know, the loss of jobs and the effect on workers in the media, but it also talked about, you know, what does this mean, and we're concerned that our issues are not, you know, that working people's issues are not getting covered, and this will exacerbate that problem. So I think there's beginning to be a realization on the part of the AFL-CIO and the leaders there that that this is an issue that goes beyond just the workers and the media, and that there is a real crisis in terms of coverage of, you know, issues for working people. And I think that's why AFL-CIO President John Sweeney spent a lot of time, particularly given his busy schedule, at the Media Reform Conference in Madison that you were so instrumental in putting together back in the fall. Mm-hmm. For him to devote, you know, essentially 2 days to that is a big commitment of time on his part, and I think it shows that the AFL-CIO is very concerned about this issue.
We're talking to Linda Foley, the president of the Newspaper Guild today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We have a caller I want to get to in a second who's been very patient. If you would like to call in, the number here, 333-9455, the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's talk about the upcoming shows for a second. A week from today, our guest will be Al Franken, who is about to launch a talk radio show of his own. He's promising to do drug-free talk radio, which is going to be an interesting concept. 2 weeks from today, we've got Ben Scott on the air talking about the media ownership fight. 3 weeks from today, a legendary journalist, Molly Ivins, will be joining us to talk. This is a real lineup of journalists we got coming, Linda. 4 weeks from today, we have Charles Lewis, the executive director of the Center of Public Integrity, talking about his new book about the buying of the president in 2004, who's paying for the candidates this year. And then 5 weeks from today, we have Janine Garofalo, the comedian and actress who's also doing a radio talk show coming up. So those are our guests for the next 5 weeks in Media Matters. I hope you will join us, and please do call in now. We have a caller, Line 1 Champagne. You're on the air with Linda Foley.
Yeah, hi. One of my pet peeves is every time I pick up a newspaper, it doesn't matter what town it's from, what newspaper it is, Associated Press coverage. And it's verbatim. You know, from one paper to another, it's exactly the same thing.
Right.
Then I turn on the radio, and it's as though the reporters on the radio are just reading the story out of the newspaper. There's no analysis. There's no no investigation, no anything on these stories. They're just printed. It really bothers me because every story there's another side. Every story is deeper than superficial, than what's on the surface. What can be done to encourage some of these reporters to dig into these stories a little bit? And I don't know. I'm just so frustrated with our news media.
Well, I think your frustration is exactly illustrative of what we were, you know, what we were talking about earlier, which is, you know, the number of cutbacks, both in terms of the resources devoted to the news outlets that there are available, and the the actual reduction in the number of news outlets that are available, the actual reduction in the number of newsrooms. Is what is causing the reliance on news services like Associated Press. And I mean, you know, again, this is not a problem that individual journalists can solve on the job. There's nothing that an individual journalist can do to solve that problem. The fact that they rely on AP, and it's the same story in various papers is because it is the same story. And instead of having their own reporter going out to do that story, they're relying on a centralized news service to bring that story to their readers, so it's going to be the same. And, oftentimes reporters, because of all these stresses that we've been discussing, and all these demands on reporters that we've been discussing, they don't have the time to do the kind of in-depth analysis that you're talking about. And that's a tremendous source of frustration for them. If you think it's frustrating for you, it's just tremendously frustrating for them. they know that they're not doing, you know, the kind of reporting and the kind of journalism that they should be doing, you know, given the resources that they need, if they had the resources to be able to do it. So in answer to your question, what can we do about it? I think, you know, for one thing, I think that, you know, as citizens, as readers, as people, as consumers of news, although I hate that term, consumers of news, I think that, you know, you need to demand that, for one thing, that the FCC not allow media consolidation, that that the FCC, in fact, do what it's supposed to do, which is promote competition among media outlets and not stifle it and not, you know, not allow news media to take a buy on it. Because, as I pointed out before, that's the way that you get really good news coverage. If you think you're going to be scooped by another news outlet, you're going to, you know, you're going to dig harder to get a better story and to get more sides of that story.
Have a website they could go to?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that, Bob.
If our media listeners want to learn more about the media ownership, journalist ownership fight, overtime fight, excuse me, or the media ownership fight, is there a website?
They certainly can go to our website, the Newspaper Guild website, which is www.newsguild.org, and we cover these issues on a continuing basis. There is also a website our union isn't the only media workers union involved in either of these struggles.
Mm-hmm.
There's another website with a lot of information from the workers' point of view, and that is the website for the Department for Professional Employees at the AFL-CIO. I'm the secretary treasurer of that. And that website is www.dpeaflcio.org.
So dpeaflcio.org.
Right. Not AFL,
AFLCIO.org.
Right.
Got it. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Linda. We've got time for more callers if someone wants to call in. In fact, our lines are lighting up as I speak. Line 4, Indiana, you're on the air with Linda Foley of the Newspaper Guild.
I just call in quickly. Remark about the lady who just was on before. Oftentimes, if you read the New York Times, you'll get several paragraphs on a story, and if you read your local newspaper, you're apt to get a paragraph, maybe a paragraph and a half. So sometimes the analysis is done later on, or at least, you know, other aspects of the story are brought up that in some sense it would be considered, you know, a different view. And the only other thing I wanted to say, which has nothing to do with reporters, is that my hometown paper oftentimes runs a story, then it gets to the end of the column, and that's it. They don't finish it because they don't have room. And I called them one time, and they said they blamed it on the computer. And they said, the computer does that. We have no control on that. Put you next in the program, and I'll hop off and let more serious questions.
No, that's a very serious question, sir. Thank you for calling.
But blaming it on the computer, that's an old copy editor trick.
Yeah, that's like the dog ate my homework, isn't it?
Right, exactly.
It ranks right there. You know, Linda Foley, one of the things that I'm concerned with and that we teach, talk about in media studies and journalism classes at the University of Illinois and on other campuses, deals with the decline of newspaper readership in the United States.
Right.
Especially among young people. One of the things that's striking today is if you ask for a show of hands of who reads a daily newspaper every single day, very few number of hands go up, and most of those are reading the sports page.
Right.
And when I was coming up, and I'm 51 now, so say 30, say, years ago, I don't think every hand would have risen, but I'd say a majority of hands certainly would have gone into the air to answer that question, a vast majority.
Right.
And, you know, we see this reflected in all the statistics and decline of readership among people under 30, especially 18 to 24, combined with decline in voter participation. Survey after survey now showing that people 18 to 24 are more likely to learn about the world, about their journalism from Jay Leno.
Right.
Than they are from their newspaper or news media. What do you make of this? Is it a problem? And if so, I mean, how do you assess it?
Well, I think it's a huge problem, and I think, you know, the worse it gets, the worse it gets for our country. I think, how do I assess it? I think part of it is, you know, is a problem of literacy and learning and education, quite frankly, in terms of, you know, putting an emphasis on reading. People, particularly young people, are not encouraged to read like they used to be encouraged to read. So that's a part of it. And as a matter of fact, we're talking in the Guild about launching an initiative on literacy and reader education and that kind of thing for that very reason. The other part of it, I think, is that there is really a blurring, and this is doesn't have to be this way, but it's kind of a laziness on the part of the media or a lack of effort on the part of the media to make a distinction. There is a blurring between information and news and entertainment. And I think that people who are growing up now are having a hard time distinguishing between those two. And it's kind of like saying distinguishing between fact and fiction, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, I think that entertainment too often is being substituted for news. And news is like education, you know? It's current events. It might be like eating your peas, but if you eat only ice cream, you're not going to be very healthy. Well, likewise, if you are developing as a citizen and as a participant in our participatory democracy here in the United States, you have to also make sure that you access credible news and information. And so I think this blurring of the line between information and entertainment, really is very, very dangerous for our democracy. And I think there is a correlation between that trend, the trend that you described vis-a-vis newspapers and people's reading of newspapers, trend toward not reading newspapers, and a lack of participation in voting and other civic affairs.
Mm-hmm.
You can't help but, draw that conclusion.
Yeah, I think the point you make is a good one, that if journalism is increasingly going to be entertaining, so you have Michael Jackson and Robert Blake and stories of that caliber being the big stories, then people will just go to pure entertainment and get the real thing rather than
get a sort of
amalgam of it.
I mean, to use an example, one of your guests, like your future guest favorite person, Bill O'Reilly, Al Franken loves to talk about Bill O'Reilly, but to use an example of Bill O'Reilly, where did he come from? He came from Inside Edition, which is essentially an entertainment show,
Mm-hmm.
Access Hollywood is essentially an entertainment show. It's being portrayed as a news show.
Mm-hmm.
And O'Reilly moves from, Inside Edition, which is essentially an entertainment show, to Fox News as a news guy.
Yep.
And there's a blurring of that line. The Leno show, that makes news. We have newsmakers now going on the Leno show, right? And David Letterman. And that makes more news. So then they report, that is news, that they were on the Leno show or the Letterman show. And it's just a cycle that never ends. And it really is, I think, detrimental to our civic discourse.
We've only got a few seconds left. We have a very patient caller. Line one from Champaign. Could you ask a very quick question, please?
I called before about the Associated Press, and my call was dropped. I'm on a cell phone.
Sorry about that.
Your guest commented that an Associated Press story is an Associated Press story, and I have to disagree with that. An Associated Press story is, it's a story, but like I said before, every story has got little stories within it and nuances and all of this. And when I read these stories, I have 1,000 questions about them. I want more information. I want better information. Yeah. I want the opposing view.
Regrettably, caller, our time is up. The band is playing. I'm going to have to bid farewell to you. I apologize for this. Linda Foley, thank you so much for joining us today in Media Matters.
Well, thank you for having me, Bob. It's been a pleasure.
And we'll have you on in the future, I'm sure. Next week, we'll be back with Al Franken. I want to thank everyone for joining us. I want to thank Victor Picard for being the wonderful producer he is. See you in a week.
AM 580 has a listener comment line. If you'd like to comment on something you hear on the Information Advantage, call 217-333-0853 and leave a message. That's 217-333-0853. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, cloudy with a high in the upper 20s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of light snow after midnight, brisk with a low in the lower 20s and south winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, shifting to the southwest and increasing to 20 to 25 miles per hour after midnight. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of light snow in the morning, the high in the mid-30s with southwest winds 15 to 25 miles per hour, gusting to 35 miles per hour. You're listening to WILL Urbana, public radio for Central Illinois. It's 2 p.m. Central Time. A Prairie Home Companion is next.